So I've decided the feedback for the bit before the theme music has not been good generally. So I've decided I'm going to stop doing the bit before the theme music. What? Are you kidding? Who are you? I'm you. You're me. No, I'm you. Pay attention. Man, you've got to keep doing the bit before the theme music. It's my favourite part. Really? Really? Oh. Okay then. Right, we'll keep it in. Fine, if that's what you want. Thanks, buddy. I love you. I love you too.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says he, my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. It's so good to have you here. Merry Christmas, you wonderful, gorgeous creature. I can't believe you made it, actually, because the weather outside is horrendous. Don't be surprised if during this episode you can hear the rain in the background. So thanks for coming. Put your umbrella outside. And could you take your jacket off as well, because it's dripping on the carpet. Yeah, and your shoes. We're not always a no-shoes house, but when you're soaking wet, why don't you just wait? I'll do the podcast and you can listen through the window. Do you want to do it that way? Because no, I don't really want you in the house. You're soaking. Get out. So I've got a packed show for you. Loads of crap going on in this one. So just before we get into the show, I guess most of you, or maybe some of you, or I don't know, maybe one of you, or maybe none of you. I don't know. I don't know what you're getting up to. No one tells me anything. Anyway, I'm guessing some people in this world had a poinsettia last Christmas, right? So this episode is coming out about the middle of September. We have a poinsettia every year. Some people say poinsettia. I'm saying poinsettia. Don't let it upset you. If I'm not saying it the way you say it, don't hold that against me. Right, now I've forgotten what I was saying. Oh yeah, so every Christmas we get a poinsettia, and the wife always like, I feel guilty about that, saying the wife. Her name's Carla, she has a name, but if I say Carla, you'd be like, who's Carla? Who's Carla? I don't know what he's talking about. So I'm saying the wife. Anyway, we always keep it. We keep it on the windowsill in the kitchen, keep watering it, and it dies. That's what they do, you know. The climate in the UK is not where poinsettias are from, so it dies. This year, it's still going. That's September, so it's like over 9 months we've had that. Is that right? No, over 8 months we've had that. Probably it's about 9 months, because we would have got it like early December. When we got it, yeah, it was like glorious red. But now it's just green, it's all green. So I'm hoping, come Christmas, it starts to turn red again. But that's fantastic. We're really chuffed with that. I'd be interested to know if you've got a poinsettia that's lasted. I'm guessing if you're in another country with a warmer climate, maybe you can keep yours outside. I don't know. I do not know. But I'd be interested to hear. Anyway, that's enough about my poinsettia. Tell me about yours. But now, let's get into the show, and we're going to start with this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a
humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
So before I get into this episode's version of A Christmas Carol, I've had an email from our American Scandinavian correspondent, Benji Pearson, and I just want to read out what he's put. It says, I have a Christmas Carol related question for you. I am planning to go as Jacob Marley for Halloween. As one of the most knowledgeable Christmas Carol authorities I know, I thought I would get your take on the must-have for my costume. What are some key elements that would help me stand out as Jacob Marley and not just a generic ghost? Oh, that's a great question, and also it's a great idea for a costume, because you're sort of merging the two holidays, aren't you? You know, you've got a ghost, obviously that's Halloween, but it's from A Christmas Carol, so you've got Christmas. So great choice there, Benji. So the description Dickens gives of Marley isn't massive, but there are a few things that you might want to take into account. So the first time we see Marley's face is in the door knocker, and it says that he has his spectacles upturned on his forehead. So that's one thing you might want to look at, some reading glasses maybe. I'm guessing they'd be reading glasses, because if he's not wearing them all the time, then he'd keep them out of the way by leaving them up on his forehead. So they must be reading glasses. That's what I'm taking from that. So yeah, a pair of like maybe half moon reading glasses you could put on your head. Then it also says that his hair was curiously stirred as if by breath or hot air. So your hair, you're going to want it to look like it's in motion. Now, I'm not suggesting you walk around holding a fan, blowing your hair constantly, but you might want to sort of tease it, maybe put some gel or wax on it to get it to sort of, so it sort of stands out a little bit, so it looks like it's sort of fluid. Worth thinking about that one. And the next thing is, it says that as Scrooge closes the door after he's seen the door knocker and the face on the door knocker has disappeared, it says he did pause with a moment's irresolution before he shut the door, and he did look cautiously behind at first, as if he half expected to be terrified with the sight of Marley's pigtail sticking out into the hall. So, sounds like you're going to have a pigtail if you want to look like the proper Jacob Marley. Now, I've seen a few different versions. There was one version I did of A Christmas Carol, and I'm not 100% sure on this. I think it was when Basil Rathbone played Marley. I know I covered one when he played Scrooge, but this is the one where he played Marley. And his pigtail, it looked like someone had just stuck a pencil in the back of his neck, because it was that thin and sticking out that far. I'm not suggesting you'd go for that. I would have thought you'd have like a longer pigtail. I don't know if this was a style of the way people wore their hair in Dickensian times, but definitely you want to have your hair tied at the back in a pigtail. If your hair's not long enough, Benji, then you can always buy one of those clip-on ones. So yeah, or maybe just get a wig, because if you're gonna have to sort of tease it and make it look like it's all in motion, maybe buy a long wig, and then a white one would be handy because it looks more ghostly, or grey, and then you could have the pigtail, and then you could cut it and style it to make it look like it's all wavy, like it states in the book. It talks briefly about what Marley's wearing, and it says his usual waistcoat, tights and boots. Now, from the sound of that, I'm sort of guessing he's wearing breeches, and then the tights would be just below the breeches. It doesn't say that, but I'm guessing that's what it means. And it also says the tassels on the latter, that's his boots, were bristling. So you're going to need some tassels on your boots, like his pigtail and his coat skirts. So he's obviously wearing a long coat as well, which is being agitated. Now, this agitation, or bristling, or as stirring, as it mentions earlier, is mentioned three times. So you might want to sort of see if there's something you can do to make it look like your clothes, or at least your hair, is sort of in motion. And then it talks about the chain. So let's look at the chain. The chain, it says, it was long and wound about him like a tail, and it was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. So there you go. I'm not expecting you to have it all. You know, a couple of small metal boxes might be handy if you've got some that you could use. Keys would be easy enough. Padlocks, another simple one. Ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel, not quite so easy to get hold of. Not as far as I've not seen many ledgers wrought in steel recently. They don't tend to have any in Tesco's, so I don't know where you'd pick up some of those. But I think, you know, if you get some boxes, I mean, to be honest, you could get some like small cardboard boxes and just paint them gold, and that wouldn't be too heavy. I'm guessing if you are going to go for the chain, it's going to be heavy if you want a big long chain, unless you can buy, that plastic chain that sometimes people put up on like their outside their houses. You could go for that, and again, spray it silver. It's worth thinking about. The final thing I want to talk about is Marley's handkerchief, which is folded and bound about his head and chin. Now, I'm sure many of you know this, but when a body dies, the muscles relax and your mouth's open, it just hangs open. So what they would do is they would get a handkerchief or a piece of cloth and tie it from the chin around the top of the head to keep the mouth closed. And then it describes in the book how Marley takes the handkerchief off and his jaw falls down to his chest, which is, I've seen that shown in a few different versions of A Christmas Carol, and sometimes they really make a meal of it. Yeah. So there you go. Those are the things that you want to take into account when you're doing your costume. I would love it if you could send me a picture, Benji, and I will put it on Facebook so everyone can have a gander. I think that'd be fantastic. So yes, those are the things. The pigtail, spectacles upturned on the forehead, which is often missed out in the film versions. Yeah, and then the outfit as it's described. There we go. So, best of luck with that. Send us the picture. Now, let's get into this episode's version of A Christmas Carol. Now, the one I'm looking at today is called Ha Ha Humbug. Now, I haven't said that the way it would sound, because this is Beavis and Butthead's Christmas Carol. This was on an episode that was aired on the December the 19th, 1995, called Beavis and Butthead Do Christmas. And it was made up of two episodes, sort of put into one. It was like an hour-long special. And in between those episodes, they had Butthead's letters to Santa, and Butthead's dressed as Santa Claus, and Beavis is like a reindeer, and he's just reading letters they've been sent in. I'm not going to go into that too much. So the two cartoon segments are Ha Ha Humbug. I guess that's meant to be done in the way Butthead laughs, but I can't do his could have been worse. And It's a Miserable Life, and which was obviously a take on It's a Wonderful Life. But I'm only going to focus, maybe I'll touch upon A Miserable Life before we end, but Ha Ha Humbug is their take on A Christmas Carol, and it's a loose adaptation, if ever there was one. So a little bit of the history of Beavis and Butthead. It was originally created in 1992 by a chap called Mike Judge, and he did a short animation called Frog Baseball. It's like 2 minutes long, where Beavis and Butthead were playing baseball with a frog, pretty much. And it was shown on a TV show called Liquid Television. I don't know if you remember Liquid Television. I used to watch it and I used to love it. It used to be on BBC Two at about 6 o'clock on weekdays. I'm thinking it was a Monday, but I could be wrong. And it was from MTV, and it would show lots of different cartoons, like short bits of animations. And that was the first place that Aeon Flux, the cartoon, turned up as well. Yeah, I used to really enjoy Liquid Television. Some of it was a bit weird though. You know, and to be honest, watching the first Beavis and Butthead cartoon, that was weird. But the producers seemed to like it, of Liquid Television, and they offered Mike Judge the opportunity to make a whole season of it. And originally, there were 7 series of Beavis and Butthead, running from 1993 to 1997. But then there was a revival, which I don't remember, in 2011. And now there's been another revival just recently, where Paramount have ordered another 2 series. And there was a film, which was Beavis and Butthead Do America, which I think came out about the mid-90s. And there's another film that's just come out called Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. And it came out just in August, so like just a couple of weeks ago. So that's a bit of a history about Beavis and Butthead. This is their Christmas special. So it starts, you've got Beavis there, and it looks like it's snowing, but it's actually Beavis pouring salt, I think it's salt, onto the grill, because they work at Burger World, and he's cooking a mouse on the grill. He makes a funny comment, actually, says this.
Got a creature with spirit.
And his manager comes up and has a right go at him, because obviously he's cooking a mouse on the grill, and starts telling him that he's never going to amount to anything if he keeps slacking off like this. And while the manager's having a go at him, Beavis falls asleep and dozes off, and we see his dream. And in his dream, he is actually the manager of Burger World. Butthead still works there, and the guy that's got Beavis's role is actually Principal McVicker, who's their high school principal. And Beavis is like having a go at him, and McVicker's there like going, oh, it's Christmas Eve, I was wondering if I could go home early. And Beavis is like, no, you can't go home. And then he says, actually, I'll play this bit as well. This is what he says in response.
We'd all like to go home. Hell, I'd like to go home and spank my monkey. In fact, that's a pretty good idea.
And so that's what Beavis decides to do. Butthead also wanted to go home early, but Beavis won't let him, because he says, I want to spend time with my family. And Beavis is like, you ain't got a family. So then Beavis goes home, and we see him at his house, and he puts in a porn movie on his VCR, and it's called Ebenezer Screw, which I thought was mildly funny. And he starts watching it, and just as there's one of the actors in it is called Tiny Johnson, so there's that. And instead of Tiny Tim, you see. Even though I think, and the other one's Bob Scratchit. But I'm guessing the Tiny Johnson's meant to be the Ebenezer kid, I don't know. Anyway, while he's watching it, who should appear on the screen in front of it but his old dead partner, Butthead. It's like, well, hang on, Butthead's not dead. Why is he a ghost? We've just seen him, like, 20 seconds ago. And now he's a ghost. And it's very short. He just sort of comes and it's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm a ghost. And then he says, oh, you're going to be haunted by some other ghosts or something. And that's it. And then Butthead's gone. And so he's like, right, I'll try and watch this porn. He starts watching it. Who should appear in the porn but Tom Anderson. Now, if you don't know Tom Anderson, Tom Anderson is their neighbour, and he's always coming out with lines like this.
Hey, wait a minute. You two look kind of familiar. Ain't you them kids that have been whacking off in my tool shed?
And you'd probably recognise that voice because he used the same voice for the character of Hank Hill in King of the Hill. And apparently, because this was originally on MTV, and I think it was Paramount where King of the Hill was shown, and they wanted to have it that he was Tom Anderson's son, but they couldn't because MTV wouldn't give him the rights to Tom Anderson's character, so that's why it was a completely different character from the one in Beavis and Butthead. So you learned something there, kids. Anyway, he's the ghost of Christmas past. He shows Beavis his past from when he was like ages 5, 6, 7, 8, and then 13. Don't know why they skip like 5 years. But every time they're looking at it, they're just watching it on the TV screen. And it's literally just Beavis and Butthead sitting there on the couch giggling like they do. That's it. But just like his 5-year-olds, and you sort of see them aging a bit till they're 13. And he's sort of saying, you know, this is all you've done. And Beavis seems quite happy about that. Then he goes, and the next one to come in is David Van Driesen. He's the ghost of Christmas present, and he's like a hippie teacher character on it, and he shows Beavis. All you see, he only shows him one scene on the TV, and it is McVicar. His family are all at home waiting for McVicar to come home because he's obviously the Bob Cratchit character, and Principal McVicar comes back, and all he's got for them is a Happy Meal, and they've got to share it between, I think he's got 6 kids there and his wife. And this is one of those interesting ones that you frequently see in cartoons. It's kind of like the Milhouse effect, where Milhouse's mum and dad both look identical. It's like a female version of they're both grown up female and male version of Milhouse, really. With this one, McVicar's kids look just like him, and his wife looks just like him, but she's got more hair, and that's it. So yeah, and so that's really sad, and they're sort of saying, you know, this is what McVicar has to live with, you know. And then he goes, and then so Beavis again is trying to watch the porn, and who should turn up this time but Coach Buzzcut. So if you don't know Coach Buzzcut, he's the ghost of Christmas yet to come, and in the cartoon he was obviously the coach at their high school. And so he shows Beavis what the future's like, and it's pretty much Principal McVicar, or is it not Principal McVicar in this, obviously because he works at Burgwood, but he's at home with his wife and his kids aren't there, and it's because they didn't have any food for them. Now, annoyingly, when I watched this on YouTube, I had to watch it in like 10 minute-and-a-half clips. It might have been a bit less than that. But they were, each clip was about a minute and a half, so I'm just watching the clip and then watch the next one. There was a tiny bit missing here, so we didn't actually find out what happened to McVicar's kids. I don't know if they were taken away or they died of starvation, but anyway, his kids have all gone. But then Beavis says, oh, that's not what the future's like. The future's going to be like all lasers and robots and stuff. And it's like, then we get like a play within a play. Now, this is weird because not only is this already a dream anyway, this whole thing is Beavis's dreaming that he's the manager of Burgworld. Now he's dreaming about the future of what. So it's like a play within a play. He's telling the ghost of Christmas yet to come what he thinks is going to happen. And it's stupid because there's like a guy complaining at the counter in Burger World to Butthead, and Butthead's like, oh, shall I get the manager? And the manager comes out, and now it's Beavis, but now he's a robot, and he just starts shooting the place up with his laser guns and blasts the whole place to bits. Yeah, I don't know. And then Coach Buzzcut is like, that's not the future, this is the future. And he takes him to this graveyard. There's like a gravestone there, and it says, here lies Beavis. And Beavis is like, oh, there's a guy with the same name as me. And that's your grave, Beavis. And on it, it says, here lies Beavis. He never... Oh, actually, I'll let Beavis tell you what it says on it.
Here lies Beavis. Whoa, check it out. There's some dead dude with the same name as me. He never scored. What a loser.
Beavis, this is your gravestone!
Yeah, I found that quite funny. He never scored, and he's not impressed with that. Then he wakes up, and he's back. So he's not waking up as him as the manager, or like that would have happened in a real Scrooge. He wakes up, and he's back at work with Butthead, and Butthead is like, hey, wake up. And he's like, what? It's like, it's 12 o'clock. And Beavis is like, yeah. And he goes, well, that means it's my turn to go to sleep now. So now Butthead's going to go to sleep at work. Yeah. I hope that made sense. I mean, it's worth watching. If you like, the problem is I never had a massive love of Beavis and Butthead. I found it very hard to watch because their characters are so grotesque. You know what I mean? And what's interesting about it is, though, it's like they are real obvious cartoon characters, grotesque, but the other characters, all the other characters in the TV show were quite like normal looking humans as they were drawn, some more than others, but it was always very interesting that these two were very more sort of caricatures or cartoony, but the other characters weren't. Anyway, why not check it out? I watched it on YouTube and it was spread out over about 8 clips, 9 clips. You know, if you want to watch it, check it out. You know, there's worse versions out there. There's a lot of better ones as well, of course. But this one's worth checking out. Boys and girls, it's pants wetting time. Yes, it's the joke. I know you're excited. I'm excited too. Try and hold the wee wee in your bladder just until I get to the punchline, okay? I know you're excited and you're going to wet yourself, not just because it's so funny, but because you're so excited. Okay, oh, just a quick side note. I can't find my Christmas jokes for Grumpy Blokes book. And I'll tell you something. It's normally my wife. She moves stuff around. And I always call it hiding stuff. Oh, you've been hiding stuff again. Because she'll tidy up, right? But she thinks she's tidying up. But she's just hiding my stuff. And if she doesn't hide my stuff, I know where it is. I know pretty much roughly where nearly all my... Not all of it. Do you know what I mean? Quite often I'm losing stuff. But most of the time I lose stuff. It's because my wife has hidden it somewhere. And when I say hidden it, she's moved it. And we frequently argue about her ability to hide all my stuff. And it's not like she's hiding it on purpose. She thinks she's helping. We've been through this. Anyway, so instead, I can't get my joke from Christmas Jokes for Grumpy Blokes. Instead, I've had to find one on the internet. So I hope you like this. Here it comes. What's the most popular wine at Christmas? I don't like Brussels sprouts. That's not a bad one, is it? I quite like that one. Yeah, you've wet yourself. You liked it too. Okay, there we go. Okay, I haven't got a jingle for this segment yet, but I'm going to get one because I like the idea behind this. This isn't my idea. This is another one from our podcast barman, Bob Baker. And he's sent me an email and it says this. I had another idea for a spot on your show. It's kind of like your podcast recommendations at the end, but I'm giving some suggestions of fun things to do at Christmas in the US and the UK and soliciting other ideas. I figured I could do these segments up through the burr months until Christmas. And I think it's a great idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. Now, I know he's going to cover the States. The States is a big place. I mean, to be honest, the UK is only a small place. But if I recommend something down in Southampton, there's going to be listeners up north that ain't going to be able to get to it. But at the same time, you know, you might be local or you might just be interested in hearing about all the things that are going on. So this is our first one. It's called Wonderful Christmas Time. I think I can find a jingle for that fairly easily. And yeah, here we go. I'll let Bob take it from here.
So now that we're in the burr months, it is time to seriously consider how we are all going to simply have a wonderful Christmas time. And I don't mean to know what are your favorite family traditions or how you're going to decorate your house. These are covered on a lot of other podcasts. I just want to know, what are you going to do to make these holidays memorable? Every year, there are all kinds of different seasonal activities. So what are your favorites? What is something new that you're going to try this year? Given that I am always comparing the US and the UK on Do You Hear What I Hear, I want to offer some choices for both of these locations. However, if you live in the rest of Europe, in the States, Canada, Asia, even Africa, let us know what you're going to be doing for Christmas. You may give us a unique suggestion to try. We might just enjoy hearing the interesting and creative ways that you are going to celebrate this same holiday. Now in the US, Santa pub crawls have become extremely popular. Every city has one. These are events where participants dress up like Santa Claus, or Mrs. Claus, or like presents, or reindeer, or even Christmas trees. The local bars offer special deals for anyone who is costumed, and the staff usually will dress up as well. the festive mob will travel from bar to bar, drinking and singing, and although this may get a little rowdy, most of the time these are just really jolly, feel-good events. I was once in Nashville during its Santa pub crawl, and a woman dressed as Santa asked me if I'd been a good boy. When I responded yes, she handed me a condom. Now, if you want to do a similar type of festive frolic in England, but in a quieter fashion, you can take a silent disco Christmas walking tour. I am not kidding. These are like traveling parties where all of the guests are wearing headphones and silently listening to the same cranked up Christmas music playlist. This often will lead to spontaneous dancing and singing in the streets, which definitely will put you in the Christmas mood. But it will also seem odd to those passers-by who can't hear the music. These also will usually include some flash mob activities, or maybe some choreographed line dance moves, all while you're out and about viewing the hidden, unique, and unusual Christmas lights and sights. You know, the party's on, and the feelings are here, the ones that come only at this time of year. So let us know where you're going to be, and how you are going to celebrate.
I think this is a great idea for a segment. My only problem is I don't get a lot of correspondence from people, so I'm kind of hoping that some of you will send in your ideas. If you don't want to record it, then just email me and tell me what your plans are, what activities you've got going on that you're going to be doing at Christmas, and I can send them on to Bob and he'll record it for the show. Now, back when I started the show, I nearly called it Your Total Christmas Podcast rather than The Total Christmas Podcast, because I wanted other people to put in their input for the show, and I wanted to be like, you know, loads of people coming up with their ideas and that. I've been really fortunate with Bob just lately that he's been sending in so much stuff, and I really do appreciate it, and I hope you're enjoying his enthusiasm too, and maybe, just maybe, it'll encourage some of you guys to send in your stories and ideas for this segment or other segments. So thanks again, Bob, and we'll be hearing from him again a little bit later in the show. But right now, boys and girls, we're doing this. I know I've mentioned this before on the show, but years ago, when I first decided I want to do a podcast on Christmas, I thought, oh, I'll see if there's any podcasts already out there about Christmas. And the first one I found was Christmas Past Podcast, and that's been going for a long time. It's not the oldest one, but it's one of the oldest ones. And it's very, very popular. I've recommended it previously on this show. And one of the things I was really interested in talking about on this podcast was the history of Father Christmas. But then the first three episodes of Christmas Past, he talks about the history of Father Christmas and Santa Claus. So this is a little bit like that, but I'm only going to talk about St. Nicholas, the historical figure that we all know and love and who became Santa Claus. So this is the history of St. Nicholas. Now, a lot of people know him as St. Nicholas of Myra, but what you might not know is that he's also known as St. Nicholas of Bari, and I'll come to why he's called that a little bit later. Now, the history about him is sketchy at best, because he lived in around the 3rd century, so we're talking 1700 years ago. They didn't keep a lot of records back then, and if they did, someone's misplaced them. I don't know who, probably my wife, hiding stuff, but it could have been anyone. Fact of the matter is, we haven't got a massive historical record of his life, but there's a few things. Interestingly, they seem to think they know what his parents could be, although I say that, they've got two different pairs of names it could be. So it's either his dad was called Epiphanius and his mother was called Johanna, or his dad was called Theophanes, I hope I said that right. To be honest, I don't really care because he probably wasn't. And his mum was called Nonna. Again, no one knows if this is true or not. No one knows where this came from. Well, probably people know where it came from, but, you know, they probably came hundreds of years after he died anyway. Well, anyway. And another thing they say is that his uncle was the bishop of the city of Myra, and he recognised in his nephew that he was a good Christian boy, and he ordained him as a priest. Again, this is, I'm not going to say apparently every time, although as many of you will remember, I'm pretty good at using the word apparently all the time. He was born in Patara in Asia Minor, and this area at the time was actually part of Greece. Although people say he was a Turkish bishop, he wasn't, because back then it was part of Greece. And the area now is actually part of Turkey. So that's why people seem to think he came from Turkey. But the area he's from is now part of... Anyway, here we go. So his parents were very wealthy and they raised him to be a good Christian boy. But both his parents died when he was very, very young. And he gave all his inheritance to the poor and the needy. Yeah. And he travelled, when he was young, to Egypt and Palestine, well, the Holy Land. He travelled to the Holy Land, and on his return, the bishop had just died. Now, I think this was the bishop after his uncle, and the priests in the town all decided that the first priest to enter the church the next day, they would make bishop. And Nicholas went into the church to do his praying early in the morning, and that was it. They made him the bishop. So he became the Bishop of Myra. Again, I've got to stop saying this. Again, there's no records to confirm this, but he was alive and practicing as a bishop around the time of the Great Persecution. Now, if you don't know what the Great Persecution was, this was pretty much the Roman Empire. They persecuted Christians, really, and locked them up or tortured them or killed a lot of them. This was under the Emperor Diocletian. But then the next emperor was Constantine the Great, and he was the first Roman emperor to be a Christian, and he freed all the Christians. So yeah, I expect Nicholas was quite happy about that, getting out of prison for good behaviour, being a Christian, good behaviour. There you go. Now, there's also claims that he attended the first Council of Nicaea. If you're not familiar with the Council of Nicaea, this was when all the heads of the churches, all the bishops got together, and they had like a council where they discussed about what they were going to teach, because obviously there's a lot of disagreement about what to teach from the Bible. And there's a story that St. Nicholas slapped the heretic Arius. Now, Arius believed that the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit were three separate entities, whereas all the other Christians believed that they were all parts of the same entity, if that makes sense. I'm sure it does if you know anything about these things. And Arius didn't agree with that, so apparently St. Nicholas slapped him. Now, the original story was that he slapped him, and then as the tale got told, more and more, apparently he punched the guy. But there's no historical record that says that he definitely was at the Council of Nicaea anyway. So you got that. So then he died on December the 6th in the year 343. Goodness knows how they know that. But that is when we celebrate the Feast of St. Nicholas, St. Nicholas's Day, December the 6th. And a lot of countries do celebrate St. Nicholas's Day. And in many countries, a lot of European countries, that is the day that Father Christmas comes. Or, as they would call him, St. Nicholas, which makes sense. Or Sinterklaas. So he was originally buried on a small Turkish island of Cemil, which was about 20 miles away from his birthplace. But because it was an island, they had to worry about attacks coming in from the ocean, because this was like a turbulent time of empires and that. And so they decided to move his relics to Myra, where he'd been the bishop. And so it was kept there for about 700 years. But then when this area, Myra, became under Turkish control, a bunch of Italian sailors from Bari in Apulia, part of Italy, they stole the remains. They went and took them back to Italy. So that's where they are now. And still, like, the Turkish authorities are trying to say, look, give us back the remains of St. Nicholas. But what's interesting, you should read this, actually. Go on Wikipedia and read about the relics, because there's some relics of his, apparently. Like, they took all the main bones, but then, like, a lot of the bits and bobs, I don't know what those bits and bobs would have been, it's like 700-year-old bits and bobs, ended up in Venice. But then there's other bits they'd send all around. There's bits, like, in churches in Europe, Russia, the US, bits of him everywhere. It's unbelievable. Bits as small as like a tooth or a finger bone. Yeah, there you go. So let's not go into it too much, but he didn't so much rest in peace, rested more in pieces, I guess. Yeah, that was a poor joke, wasn't it? Well done, Jack. You've ruined Christmas. That's pretty much the historical story of St. Nicholas. Now, there's a lot of different legends about St. Nicholas. And what I thought I might start doing is just telling the odd one, not every episode, but maybe every a couple of episodes, we'll see. I'll just tell, as a short segment, I'll tell another one of his stories. Now, the first one I want to tell is the one that everyone will be familiar with. Now, I've heard a few different versions of this story, but I'm going to tell the version that I like the most. St. Nicholas heard of a devout man who had once been wealthy but had lost all of his money due to the plotting and envy of Satan. That's an interesting one, isn't it? The plotting and the envy of Satan. Where's all your money gone, mate? Satan? What? Satan? He come round, took it all. Have you just spent it on gambling? Yep. Yeah. And beer. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I ain't got none left. None. So, the man could not afford proper dowries for his three daughters. If you don't know what a dowry is, if you had a daughter, you'd have to pay someone to marry her. That's the deal. Isn't that awful? I got two daughters. That costs. Because even today, it's like the father of the bride is expected to pay for the wedding. I don't think it's much these days, but you know, that used to be a proper thing, was the father of the bride would pay for the wedding. Like in the movie, Father of the Bride. Anyway, back in these days, you had to pay a decent sum of money for a dowry for your daughters. And the more dowry you had, the better husband your daughters would get. So, this is the bit I love the most, right? So he couldn't afford a dowry for three daughters, and this meant that they would remain unmarried and probably end up as prostitutes. That's pretty much the job options you've got. So they go down the job centre and they're like, so what could you do? Well, I'm good at cleaning. Right. What else could you do? I'm good at sewing. Oh, that's good. Good. Are you good at cooking? Yeah, I'm very good at cooking. Okay, let me see what we've got. Right, you can be a prostitute. Could I not be a cook? No, you're going to be a prostitute. And your sisters, all three of you, prostitutes. Couldn't we, like, go into business, like, sewing, making dresses? No, didn't you hear what I said? You're going to be prostitutes. You and your sisters are... Anyway, that's how the story goes. And nearly every version of the story I've read is they were going to end up as prostitutes. Okay, fine. So, hearing of the plight of these girls, Nicholas decided to help them. But being too modest to help the family in public, and he didn't want them to have to suffer the humiliation of accepting charity, and the night the first daughter came of age, St. Nicholas went round the house, chucked a bag of gold in through the window. So the father had a handsome dowry and he could marry her off. So then, when the second daughter came of age, St. Nicholas does the same thing as well. That night, goes round the house, chucks a bag of gold in through the window. Right? And the father's like, oh, handy, I can marry this one off now. Now I've only got one daughter who's going to be a prostitute. But then he thought, hang on a minute, I see a bit of a pattern emerging here. So when the third daughter came of age, the father stayed up waiting to catch St. Nicholas. But St. Nicholas could see him waiting. So what he did was he climbed up on the roof and he threw the bag of gold down the chimney, and wouldn't you know it, it landed in someone's stockings that was hanging by the fire to dry off. There you go. That's one version. Another version is that the man stayed up and he caught St. Nicholas and he said, oh, you're St. Nicholas, are you? Thanks for the money. And St. Nicholas says, oh, don't tell anyone though, because, like, you know, I like doing these things on the quiet because I'm really nice like that. Now, what's interesting is, because of this story, and I never really put two and two together with this, but you know, like, you get the chocolate coins at Christmas, little bags of chocolate coins. Those bags of chocolate coins are like to represent the bags of gold that St. Nicholas gave to the three daughters. And here's another interesting fact. You know, like a pawnbroker's, their symbol is the three gold balls. Well, those gold balls, again, are to symbolise the three bags of gold that St. Nicholas dished out. So there you go. You learned something today. So that's the story. That's the first story that everyone's very familiar with. And in coming episodes, I'll be telling you some of the other stories about St. Nicholas's life and also the miracles that happened after he died in his name. Now, before we move on to the next segment, I've got a little quiz for you. And this isn't today's quiz. This is another quiz. This is called Patron Saint or Patron Ain't. And I'm going to list out a load of jobs and you're going to tell me if you think he is the patron saint of that or he ain't the patron saint of that thing. Okay, so here we go. I've got 14 of these. Number one, is he the patron saint of children? Patron saint or patron ain't? Number two, is he the patron saint of coopers? If you don't know what a cooper is someone who makes barrels. Okay. Number three, is he the patron saint of travellers? Number four, is he the patron saint of sailors? Number five, is he the patron saint of fishermen? Six, is he the patron saint of merchants? Seven, is he the patron saint of broadcasters? Eight, is he the patron saint of the falsely accused? Nine, is he the patron saint of repentant thieves? 10. Is he the patron saint of brewers? 11, is he the patron saint of pharmacists? 12, is he the patron saint of archers? 13, is he the patron saint of unmarried people? And 14, is he the patron saint of pawnbrokers? So you've got 14 there, okay. Are you ready for the answers? The answer is all of them. He's the patron saint of every single one of those things I read out. And not only that, he's the patron saint of loads of countries and loads of cities as well. We've got Aberdeen, Liverpool, Moscow, Amsterdam. Yep, he's a few countries on there as well. He's pretty much, you name it, he's the patron saint of it. So yeah, he gets about a bit. He does old Saint Nick. So that's the story of Saint Nicholas. That's his history. Now it's time for this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Bob's back. Bob's back with Do You Hear What I Hear? This episode is going to be talking about the word dodgy. Take it away, Bob.
Oh boy. I sometimes feel like alcohol is my own worst enemy. The good thing is, Mama always told me to love my enemies. So I know that I like to reference one of my favorite UK Christmas films, Love Actually. Maybe it's because the film shares a US-UK crossover like on Do You Hear What I Hear? It's also the reason why I choose to live close to Wisconsin. So in Love Actually, when Natalie tells the Prime Minister where she lives, she says that it's in Wandsworth, the dodgy end. Now not knowing my London geography, I am not familiar with Wandsworth. But what did she mean by the dodgy end? In the US, we don't use the term dodgy. We may dodge an uncomfortable question, or play dodgeball, which, like in the movie, it's a game where you throw balls at the other team. The American meaning for dodge is avoidance. We dodge from something we don't want to talk about, or we dodge from somewhere we don't want to be hit. However, that does not seem to be what Natalie means. You suspect from the context that Natalie is trying to say that she lives in the rougher or more run-down part of Wandsworth. This makes sense as she is the secretary and he is the prime minister. Natalie is trying to tell him that she comes from a common background and lives in a working class area. And yet, when Hugh Grant goes door to door to search for her, the neighborhood seems lovely. The first house has an old woman who recognizes the prime minister. Next door, there are three delightful young girls who make him sing a Christmas carol. Moving on, there is the vixen, who wants to be with Alan Rickman. Now she may be the villain of the film, but she still has a nice house. Finally, he arrives at Natalie's home, filled with family members who all seem charming. Well, except when they reference her weight. So if I consider all of this together, dodgy must mean warm and friendly. Am I right? Cheers and happy Christmas.
Well, sadly, Bob, you were right the first time. Dodgy means rough. If someone's, a bit shady. If someone's a bit dodgy, they can't really be trusted. So, there we go. Well, thanks very much again for that one, Bob. I love the way that Bob always gets the word and then makes it Christmassy and associates it to Christmas, like he did with Love Actually. Well done there, Bob. He'll be back again in the next episode, but right now it's time for this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. So get this right, I just went to go and find my festive quiz game, okay, for this part of the show. And I went to the wife, oh, where's my festive quiz game? Couldn't find it where it normally is. And she's like, oh, yeah, I think it's upstairs. I go upstairs, guess where she's put it? Right, in the spare room, for no reason, but guess what's with it? Christmas jokes for grumpy blokes. Can you believe that? It's just unbelievable. So you can't believe it, because it's unbelievable. If it was believable, you'd be able to believe it. Right, so, you know the deal. I read out 10 questions, and then I hum 5 songs. But what I tell you is, I'm going to read out 10 questions, and then hum 10 songs, because I'm not really paying attention. So, are you ready, boys and girls? Here come the questions. Question number one. Which three of Father Christmas's name dears have... Let's try that again. Which three of Father Christmas's reindeer have names beginning with the letter D? I'll give you a clue. Rudolph is not one of them. Okay? Neither is Vixen. All right? That's just two of them. There's some more. For example, Donna. Oh no, hang on, Donna is one of them. Sorry, I'm giving you too many clues. Right, question number two. Which Christmas carol is known as Stille Nacht in German? Which Christmas carol is known as Stille Nacht? I'm probably saying that wrong, but it's spelt Nacht in Germany. Question number three. In what year did Hallmark introduce its first Christmas card? In 1915, Hallmark introduced their first Christmas card. What year was that? Question number four. Who duetted with Robbie Williams for a Christmas UK number one in 2001? Very famous. I'll give you a clue. She's a very famous actress. Okay, I knew this one, but I'm giving you a clue anyway, because that's the kind of guy I am, man. Right, question number four, but that's not. Question number five. Complete this line from The Night Before Christmas. And visions of X danced in their heads. So what were those visions? They're having these visions. It's Christmas Eve. They're having visions, man. Crazy visions. What's dancing in their heads? Question number six. True or false? Tinsel was originally made from shredded silver. That's a true or false one. Question number something. Hang on. Seven. We're on seven. Right, okay. According to the 12 days of Christmas, what kind of... Oh my God, this is so easy. According to the 12 days of Christmas, what kind of tree was the partridge sitting in? You know the line where it says, and a partridge in a pear tree. What kind of tree was that one? Right, question number eight. In what year was the film The Polar Express released? They set it free. They released it into the world. But what year did they release it into the world? And has it survived in the world? Question number nine. Which one? Oh, it's another one about Father Christmas's reindeer. Which one shares its name with a type of animal? I'll give you a clue. It's not dancer. Okay, now you might be thinking of a dancing frog, because some frogs are probably quite good at dancing. It's not that animal. Okay, it's not a dancing frog. That the move on. Okay, number 10. Is this number 10 now or number 10 already? Right, goodness, that was quick. Question number 10. Which Christmas object was invented by a London sweet maker in 1847? Any ideas? No? Well, you're going to get that one wrong then, aren't you? Okay, right, that was the 10 questions. Now I'm going to hum the 10 songs. Again, it's 5 songs. I'm just being hilarious. Okay, here comes song number one. Okay, question number two. Sorry, not question number two, song number two. That's all you're getting. Question number three. Question number four. Question, sorry, song number five. That's all you're getting. That is number five. Right, let's get these answers out of here. Here we go. Question number one. Which three of Father Christmas's reindeer have names beginning with the letter D? The answers was Doris, David, and Daniel. Question number two. Oh, sorry, actually. No, it's not. It's Dasher, Donna, and Dancer. Okay. Question number two. Which Christmas carol is known as Stille Nacht in German? I'm saying Nacht. I'm sure it's Nacht or some Nat. I don't know. Silent Night, that one was. Question number three. In what year did Hallmark introduce its first Christmas card? The answer was 1915. Question number four. Who duetted with Robbie Williams for a Christmas UK number one in 2001? That was Nicole Kidman, would you believe? Do you know what they sung? I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. Yeah, that's what they sang, something stupid. So now you've learned something, kids. Question number five. Complete this line from The Night Before Christmas. And visions of X danced in their heads. X is sugar plums danced in their heads. Of course you knew that. Tinsel was originally made from shredded silver, true or false? And do you know what? I covered that, and I think it was episode 3 of the podcast where I talked about tinsel, and that is true. Yes, they did, but it used to tarnish very easily, and so that's why they started making it out of, they made it out of aluminium, and then they started making it out of plastic. Yeah. Question number something. According to the 12 Days of Christmas, what kind of tree was the partridge sitting in? A pear tree.
Yeah.
In what year? Question number... What is this? What are we on? Six, is it now? In question number 6, in what year was the film The Polar Express released? It was 2004. I tell you what, I didn't see it when it came out, and I left it a good few years before I finally watched it, and I really do like it. I watch it most years, and it's a great film. Yeah, I do. I'm a big fan. Question number 7, which one of Father Christmas's reindeer shares its name with a type of animal? The answer is Dancer, the dancing frog. Question number 9, sorry, it was Vixen. A vixen is a female fox. That was number 8. That was number 7. I'm doing well with the numbers tonight. Hang on, wait a minute. That wasn't even question number 8. That was number 9. Is that right? Have I ballsed this up? What's going on here? Nope, yeah, that was question number 9. Right, last one. Which Christmas object was invented by a London sweet maker in 1847? And the answer was the 1847 commemorative bauble. And that's a joke. A very bad joke, actually, if that's the best I can come up with. No, it was the Christmas cracker. That was 1847. That's how long they've been going. There we go. So, the songs I hummed for you were... I'll have a blue Christmas without you. Number 2 was God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. Number 3 was Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Number 4 was Oh Holy Night. And number 5 was It's a Little Saint Nick, a Little Saint Nick. There you go. Those were your 15 questions. I hope you got them all right. If you did, why not drop me an email? Do you know what? I did get an email, actually, after last episode saying no one tells me what it's called. I got an email from Benji Pearson saying that he got all of them apart from 3. And he also said that his son thinks I sound like I record the podcast drunk. Well, I replied to him about that, and I said, I tried it once. I was a bit drunk in an episode, and it was just such a shambles. I had to record the whole episode again, so I've never done it again since. Occasionally, I'll have a beer before I do the show, but not much more than that, because I just stumble all over my words. I mess the whole thing up, and it just means I've got to spend more time editing as well. So, yeah, that's the story of me drinking. So the quiz will be back next episode, but now it's time for this. This episode's recommendation is a podcast called You Must Remember This. And I've been listening to this podcast for years now. Goodness knows how many years, but it's a few. It's been going since 2014, and it's dedicated to exploring the secret and or forgotten histories of Hollywood's first century. The podcast was created and is written, produced and narrated by Karina Longworth. And I've got to say, she does some fantastic research, and she's got a fantastic voice as well. She really does do a great job. And this is coming from the website. Since launching as a passion project in April 2014, You Must Remember This has become one of the top film podcasts around. This podcast is a heavily researched work of creative non-fiction, and they tell stories of the long forgotten history of Hollywood, like from back in the days of the black and white films, and even some of them from the silent era as well. It's so interesting, and it's so well researched and so well done. And occasionally she'll have famous people on there as well, doing sort of like the voices of the people she's talking about. She's had people on there like Patton Oswalt, Fred Savage, Dana Carvey's been on there, and Will Wheaton. Yeah, so I highly recommend it. It's like a real historical thing, so it really is worth listening to. The episodes vary in length, normally between like half an hour to up to an hour. Yeah, check it out. There's a lot of episodes on there, you know, hundreds. So yeah, there's plenty of back episodes to listen to. If you haven't checked it out before, try it. You Must Remember This podcast. I'm a big fan. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, please do. I know I say it every episode, and some people do, most people don't. Do you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I've got a few listeners out there, and there must be people that listen every week and they've not once emailed me. And I would love just to hear from someone who hasn't emailed me before. Just a quick email just to say, yeah, I'm one of your listeners. I listen to your rubbish old show. Just sort of let you know I'm here. I'd love to hear that. You don't have to, you know. It would just be nice to hear from someone new. It's nice to hear from everyone, though, the people that get in touch frequently. It's nice to hear from all of you. That's why I do the show. I've said that before. I've said it a number of times This is why I do the show, to entertain you and, you know, reach out and meet new people. So that is it for this episode. I will be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Christmas.
All I want for Christmas is you.
Right. Thank you. Good. Good night.